Hi guys, welcome back to the Grow the Jazz podcast. I'll be bringing you fitness education and practical application. Today we are back with a firm favourite of everyone, which is a Q&A episode. So I've picked out some questions from my Instagram stories that I thought would be helpful to cover today. And I'm going to go through them for you. So let's just dive into it. We are going to start with, why do I mostly lose fat in my chest and not everywhere else in my body? How can I keep my chest as a woman? Yeah, I feel you. And I think a lot of people feel your pain. That kind of brings to mind the quote, you can have anything you want, but you can't have everything you want. And unfortunately, with fat loss, you know, as women, we store fat, you know, differently to each other, but you know, generally, you know, breast tissue. So if you're talking about your boobs, breast tissue, some of that, and well, all of that is body fat. So if we lose weight, if we lose fat, you are going to lose some of your boobs. Same thing with your bum. Women store weight around their bum, around their hips. When you diet, some of that will go. And unfortunately, there is nothing you can do to change that. You can't alter whereabouts in your body that you're going to lose the fat from. And so I guess you kind of have to make the decision. Do I want to keep my boobs and not lose fat overall? Or do I want to lose fat and accept that my boobs are going to become a bit smaller? That really is the simple answer there. Obviously, you can kind of train your chest muscles, but I don't, in my opinion, you know, the chest muscles sit differently to boobs, so I don't really think that building chest like makes your boobs look particularly bigger. So I know that's probably not the answer you wanted from me, but it is just one of those things where you have to kind of pick your poison and decide which one you care the most about and accept that you can have anything you want, but not everything you want. Next question, when going up in weight, how do I know how much to increase the weight by? The answer to that isn't, there's no kind of defined rule, but as a guideline, you want to be going as heavy as you possibly can with great form within your target rep range. And so it depends on how easy was the previous weight. You know, if you were, you know, if your rep range was 8 to 12 and you were hitting 12 reps for 3 sets, then that suggests that actually, you know, you could do the top of the rep range 3 times. It must be relatively, you know, it wasn't challenging you particularly if you could do it, as I said, 3 times. So you may be able to increase the weight, you know, a decent step. If you were, you know, if you'd only just kind of, if you'd really challenge yourself in with that kind of previous weight and you're just looking for a small increment, seeing if you can kind of still remain within the target rep range, then you might be just adding those little 1.25 kilos aside. It also obviously depends on the exercise as well. You might be able to increase your leg press by, you know, put an extra 5 kilos aside, but a lateral raise, you know, the increments in that is going to be a whole lot smaller. So there's no hard and fast rule there, but I'd say, well, go as heavy as you possibly can with grip whilst maintaining your really good technique and getting within your target rep range. And as I said, it depends on the exercise, but also it's going to depend on how long you've been doing the exercise for. So if you're kind of newer to an exercise or you've just started a program and you're in the first 2-3 weeks of a program, actually quite often people undershoot within the first few weeks. You know, they often kind of underestimate their kind of strength and exercises. And you, at the beginning, you might be able to add, you know, 10 kilos to the bar, an extra 5 kilos to this machine, etc. But if you've been doing exercise for ages, you've had it in your program for ages, you know, you've been working on the same exercise for a long time, like me with my RDLs, for example, I pretty much always have them in my program. There's no way I'm suddenly 1 week going to just add, you know, my increments would be as small as possible and pretty few and far between in terms of how regular I can do that. You know, I'd definitely just be the kind of 1.25 kilo plates aside, maybe just on the first set, then I drop back down in weight and for the second and third set perhaps. So unfortunately, there's no clear answer to that. So you're just going to have to judge, how easy was it before? Am I choosing a weight that's really challenging within me within this rep range? You might get it wrong. You might increase the weight and actually you could still hit the upper end of the rep range. You go, okay, I underestimated that a bit again. And so, you know, that's part of training. It's kind of a learning process. Next question. Can you tell us about the benefits of intermittent fasting for fat loss? I can. Intermittent fasting might help people lose fat, but it's nothing special about the fasting itself, aside from the fact that, so intermittent fasting, if you don't know, is basically having like these eating window, these periods that you eat and periods that you fast. So the most common is like a 16-8 split where you fast for 16 hours of the day and you eat for 8 hours of the day. So I mean, it might be like, that would be, for example, you finish eating at 6 p.m, then you don't eat till midday the next day. So it's like, it's not crazy, but you know, that's an example. So it's nothing magic about the fasting, apart from the fact that it just gives people less time to eat, you know, to be eating. You've only got those 8 hours that you can be eating, and for some people that means they might eat less. Cool, great. If that helps for you, that's fine. Some people might also anecdotally experience other benefits from it. Some people report that they have like better mental clarity when they're fasting, but that's not like a blanket experience. And there's also a flip side with lots of potential downsides. For example, some people might find that actually when it gets to their eating window, they end up massively overeating because they got really hungry, or they see this as their chance, oh shit, I'm gonna have to, you know, stop eating soon, I better get in as much food as I can. So it can be counterproductive. It can be a bit unsociable due to having that set eating window. If you've got to finish eating by 7 p.m. and your friends want to meet for dinner at 7:30, then that's a problem. It might have an impact on training performance and recovery. If you want intermittent fast, but you train first thing in the morning, well, then you're not going to be able to have anything beforehand. You stopped eating quite early the night before, and then you don't get, you know, within the hours after your training session, you might not be eating for another 4 hours or whatever. And we know that's probably not ideal, kind of protein-wise, carbohydrate-wise, from a recovery standpoint too. It's going to be unideal for women who are looking to kind of regulate their hormones better. Maybe you're recovering from HA, so like loss of period, for example. You know, one big thing surrounding that is having regular eating kind of times throughout the day, you know, regular calorie kind of distribution throughout the day. So yes, it might help some people, you know, having a restricted eating window might help some people eat less, but it might not for many other people. And as I said, there's nothing magic about the fast, you know, the fast itself. It's just you're not eating, so it might reduce the calories you eat for the day, but again, it might work in the opposite way for you. So, you know, there we have it. How should you adapt training if you no longer want to grow a part of your body? I guess one answer is stop training it. You could also reduce the volume for that body part. So when we're thinking about training volume, so volume just basically means how much work you do on a certain body part in a week, for example. So volume wise, we need to be growing a muscle, we need to be hitting this kind of threshold of enough work that is going to cause it to grow. And so we'll have like a growth threshold, and then we'll have like a maintenance volume, so a volume where that will just kind of maintain that level of muscle you have. So reducing the amount of volume you are doing for a body part to around kind of maintenance levels, so you just maintain that muscle rather than growing it. You could also reduce the intensity. So we know, particularly if you are more kind of experienced in the gym, we know we need to be working relatively close to muscle. You know, so we're thinking about kind of almost doing the opposite of what we're trying to do when we're wanting to build a muscle. But we know when we're trying to build a muscle, we need to be relatively close to muscular failure. So, you know, at highest about kind of 3 reps in reserve, I'd say. So between 0 and 3 reps in reserve. So you could stay further away from failure, choose weights that don't challenge you as much, keep a lot more reps in the tank. And you could also think about not training the muscle kind of directly. For example, if you're not interested in building your quads any further, you could avoid kind of quad focused exercises, like, you know, a quad focused squat or a leg extension, that kind of thing. But no, they'll get some kind of stimulation from maybe your glute bias squatting patterns, like your split squats and your lunges and your leg press, for example. But you'd do those with a technique that would bias the glutes, and maybe just kind of by proxy, obviously you're going to get some quad, but that might be more at around kind of maintenance volumes. And obviously there's no like hard and fast rules for, well, how much is maintenance volume. That's something that can vary between people, but obviously look at the volume you you've done to grow it, and then start by reducing that, and you're gonna, it might be a case of kind of trial and error and seeing how your body responds. Next one, I'm so confused about steps being different to cardio. How much of what should I be doing? Yeah, I understand that confusion. Steps are just an easy way for us to measure kind of general movement. So there's nothing special about kind of steps in itself. It's just particularly, you know, if you're working with a coach, for example, then being able to see your steps, that gives me a gauge of how active you are throughout the day, or how sedentary you are. Now, if we're talking about dieting, because I think this is where maybe steps and cardio tend to, you know, it's not important, but it can be helpful to kind of differentiate them, and it comes from a fat loss, you know, situation. But so when you're dieting, we can use movement to help create your calorie deficit, because moving around more burns more calories. So in a fat loss phase, a coach might prescribe a step target to determine how much someone moves throughout the day. Then if needed, they can also prescribe cardio sessions to help further increase that movement across the week. Now, a cardio session is something that is going to be higher intensity than steps / walking. It gets the heart rate up more, gets the blood pumping more. It's going to be a more efficient way of burning calories. So, you know, if you did 30 minutes of walking versus 30 minutes on the Stairmaster or of kind of moderate intensity spinning, those 30 minutes of the more formal cardio are going to burn more calories, you know, getting heart rate up, you're burning more calories in a shorter time. And they're prescribing that cardio in addition to your step target. So they might not want the steps done in that cardio session to count towards your step goal, because these are just tools they're using to help create more. So if you have a step target, but then they add some cardio, and those steps, the kind of steps you build up during the cardio session, you're classing that as your step goal. You can see how that kind of becomes blurred, and it's not as easy for them to kind of say, okay, well, yes, that additional cardio has helped create that kind of energy deficit, because they've kind of come into one. So that might be in addition to your step target. So that's why someone might want you to separate a step goal from additional cardio. Now, outside of that setting, it doesn't matter too much at all. You can, you know, you don't have to see steps as different from cardio if you're not dieting, and if it's not something that's being kind of prescribed for you, it doesn't really matter. You know, steps, cardio. Now, is walking cardio? Unless someone is very sedentary and quite overweight, walking isn't really cardio. It's not taxing your cardiovascular system enough to call it kind of cardio. If you want to be cardiovascularly fit, you will need to be doing something that will challenge that system more than just walking. So that's maybe like another reason why someone might separate steps from cardio. So either in a fat loss setting, when someone's trying to prescribe your movement, steps and some additional cardio, that's why they might want to keep them separate. And then maybe if we're talking from like a training standpoint and a health building standpoint, steps being like a measure of your general movement throughout the day, but then cardio being, okay, how much are we challenging the cardiovascular system across the week? Probably, you know, and that is going to be different from just doing steps, because it's probably for people who aren't overweight and people who maybe have a bit more experience with exercise and that kind of thing, it's not going to be challenging the cardiovascular system enough, really. You'd need to do something more. Okay, wondering what gym split would be complementary to two runs a week. In an ideal world, how would you spread out 4 gym sessions and 2 runs in the week if the goal is mostly strength gain, brackets the 3 main lifts, so that'd be squat, bench and deadlift, and getting fitter with running? Okay, so to talk about split, so you said 4 gym sessions per week. So there's no single right answer there, apart from I'd probably avoid doing 4 full body sessions. So you could do 2 upper, 2 lower, you could do push pull, 2 lower, you could do 2 full body upper lower. kind of the more full body you do, I imagine the more difficult it would be to kind of plan your week out, because the main thing that interferes when we're talking about kind of lifting and running, apart from kind of general fatigue and recovery, but that tends to be less of a problem, particularly if you're not kind of running like random half marathons and stuff, it tends to be thinking about your lower body. So obviously running can be taxing on the lower body, and you also want to train lower body in the gym. So if you're doing full body really regularly, or you know, four times a week, or you know, the more you're doing full body, that will obviously be including lower body, and so that makes it a bit harder to kind of schedule in across your week. You've said that lifting and gaining strength in your three main lifts is your priority. So we know that the aim is going to be as fresh as possible for those sessions. So with that in mind, the main thing I'd consider is, okay, I want to avoid running the day before I'm going to train lower body. I'd probably, if you're lifting 4 days a week, I'd probably tend towards two upper, two lower. And you could split that up across the week. You know, I'll give you a few examples. So you could do Monday lower, Tuesday upper, Wednesday run, Thursday upper, Friday lower, Saturday run, Sunday rest. So I'm never training run before I train lower, or a pattern similar to that. It could be instead something like Monday lower, Tuesday run. Obviously, with the knowledge that if you train lower the day before the run, your legs might be a bit sore on the run. But you have to pick which one you care the most about, and recognize that, okay, I'm not always going to be 100% for the other. And that's okay. That's the nature of doing a kind of hybrid form. Like people are so scared of, oh, I'm a bit sore, should I go? And it's like, the body is really adaptive and stuff. Like, unless you are debilitated or you're exhausted or you're just recovering terribly, et cetera, having a bit of a soreness and then having to kind of go and do a run or whatever, it's just, you know, your body can handle it. It's really not the end of the world, but it's just something to kind of keep in mind, and that is why it's important to have be clear on your priorities. But kind of going back to that second example, you could do Monday lower, Tuesday run, Wednesday upper, Thursday rest, Friday lower, so I'm resting the day before low, I'm resting the day before my priority, Saturday run, Sunday upper, for example. And you know, you could do upper the day before lowers, because that wouldn't interfere with each other too much. And I mean, even if you wanted more rest days in the full rest days in the week, you could even do a run and an upper session on the same day. Maybe you could train upper in the morning and then run after work. So there's a number of ways you could do it, but I'd say be clear on your priority, recognize what that means. So for example, if my priority was running, I might have to accept that in some of my gym sessions, I might be a little bit more tired or sore from my hard run the day before. But I just accept that. You know, I do my best to spread things throughout the week, but I recognize there's only 7 days in a week. And if I want to train a lot, you know, you're going to have to take some kind of little compromise somewhere. So be clear on your priority, recognize what that might mean. Recognize that, as I said, the biggest interference tends to be lower body and running, and then plan your session in that way, where if, as I said, if lifting is your priority, don't run the day before, make sure you're as fresh as possible for those lower body sessions, and that would be my general advice there. So I think we'll finish there with the questions. Hopefully those were useful. If you've got any more questions, you know, and want me to expand any further on things I've touched on today, shoot me a DM, shoot me an email. I'm always happy to help and have a chat with you guys. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day, and I'll speak to you again next week.